6. Are you certain you've managed to block the GPS? Tripp asked Marcus.
Definitely, it's not overly complicated, the younger man told him.
No one will know where we took this baby. Veronica sat in the tour helicopter's pilot seat, and Hunter had chosen the one beside her. The rest of us cramped into the bench in the back, with Marcus taking the middle.
This is almost the same model as the ones I flew in Maui, she said. Simple, simple.
She went over a checklist, her lips moving as soundless words emerged, and soon we were given clearance through the radio. Hunter spoke Japanese to the man on the radio, and Veronica lifted us from the concrete pad. There was room for a dozen other helicopters, with a few of them already departed for an aerial tour of Fuji and the surrounding area. This was big business, and another copter checking out the sights wasn't conspicuous in the least. My head was foggy from the late-night beers, but mostly from the stress of our revelation at the bar. It was a clear morning, a contradiction to the crisp evening with light snowfall the night before. The sky was a brilliant blue, and I did my best to spot a single cloud, but failed. Mount Fuji stood straight ahead, a giant and picturesque reminder of how insignificant we were as humans. Veronica took us on the normal path, heading around the city and toward Fuji. Below, lines of tour buses and private cars drove for the summit, and I spotted hikers moving for the base of the mountain as we veered off, heading west. Veronica lowered, and I heard her voice through the headset.
Always wanted to see the Shiriito Falls.
They were spectacular, dozens of waterfalls dropping like silk into a crystal lake. If we're done ogling the sights, do you think we could move on to the target? Tripp asked, making Veronica crane her neck to frown at the man behind Hunter.
Smell the roses, Tripp.
We continued on, the journey taking a short time. The ground was snow-covered the farther north we traveled, and I stared out the window, seeing Fuji in the east, the presence of the mountain a constant in this region.
I've rented the entire facility for the day, Hunter told us.
His money was good for a lot of things, including feigning private functions at places like the ice caves. Veronica found a safe spot to land, just on the outer edge of the empty parking lot. The entire complex was surrounded by thick forest, and I saw a single car in the lot near the entrance to the tunnels. A woman ran toward us, her hair flying wildly in the wind. Veronica powered off the helicopter and we exited, Hunter walking to the frenzied lady. She waved her arms around, obviously not thrilled with our choice of transportation. I couldn't hear their conversation, but eventually she nodded before leaving in her car. The blades slowed, and soon we were surrounded by a crisp silence.
Lava tubes. Dirk had some imagination, Tripp said.
You're certain we're alone? I asked Hunter.
You'd be surprised how difficult it was to convince them to shut this down on such short notice.
He smiled, despite his complaints.
But it's done. Come, destiny awaits.
The entrance was marked at the edge of the forest, dipping below a yard of earth. Tree roots broke through the ceiling, and I glanced up as we descended a handful of steps, gripping bamboo railing to steady myself. Veronica was hurrying, and Marcus chased after her. I took a moment before entering to double-check the GPS and saw the indicator close by. The coordinates were specific, but we'd still have some work to do to locate the token once inside.
Are you coming?
Hunter asked, and I looked around, realizing the others were long gone.
Sure.
Is there something on your mind?
He asked. It was strange seeing Hunter in jeans and an orange puffy jacket. He wore earmuffs, his hands adorned with thin leather gloves. There's a lot on my mind, but we'll have time to discuss that after we secure this token. I patted him on the back and walked inside, careful on the wooden planks. It was quiet in the ice tube's entrance, eerily so, and Tripp was distributing hard hats. He was the only one of us to carry a pack, and I could guess what was inside it.
Everyone stay safe. The ceilings are short and it'll get chilly inside, Tripp said. We don't have far to walk. These old lava tubes were created by Fuji a long time ago.
This seems too busy a tourist location to leave one of the tokens,
Veronica said. I didn't have the heart to mention where we were off to next. She probably wouldn't believe me. Hunter took the lead, ducking under a low-lying cavern opening, and we started down the man-made walkways. It was musty, and Marcus sneezed a couple of times. The sound was muted in the dense cavern. Metal railing lined the center of the passageway as we rounded a bend and my helmet struck the rock. Marcus laughed, but the distraction caused him to do the same, which made him laugh even louder.
"I'm glad this is amusing to you," Hunter said. "We're on the precipice of finding the second token, and yet you're able to express your mirth."
For a second I thought he was reprimanding Marcus, but his smile was genuine. He looked younger today and appeared happy to be part of the team as we explored the lava tubes. We continued on, and the air grew colder with each passing minute.
"The ice," Veronica said, pointing to the right, and I saw it.
Thick, frozen walls rose along the cavern's stone, and the facility had placed fences around it, running the entire length of this passageway to prevent patrons from touching it. Light shone from the ground every few yards, guiding the path. We kept moving, but I stopped as I glanced at the GPS. We'd been inside for only a few minutes, but I noticed we were already heading in the wrong direction.
"Guys, it's the other way."
"There is no other way, Rex."
Tripp leaned over me, trying to see the device.
"See?"
He tapped the screen and then jabbed a finger at the wall behind us.
"There is no route through."
Marcus had a flashlight and exited the trail, climbing past the fence.
"Careful,"
I warned him, but he was already heading away from our group. With a sigh, I followed him.
"Just what I thought. There's an opening,"
he called from around a corner.
"Stay where you are. We're coming."
Water dripped from above, down my helmet and in front of my face. The ice was thicker, with long icicles stretching from floor to rocky ceiling, making them 8 feet high as we arrived at Marcus's side. I checked the GPS and saw it was close, maybe 300 yards in this direction.
"It's on the other side of here."
Coordinates were only accurate to a certain distance, but it was clear the token had to be across the tunnel. Unfortunately, our journey was blocked by thick pieces of ice. Tripp set his pack down with a thump and unzipped it.
"Did you bring a hairdryer?"
Veronica asked him, but he didn't reply. He pulled two ice picks out and tossed one my way. He handed Veronica a fine-toothed saw and assessed the obstruction before us.
"They're going to freak out when they encounter the damage," Marcus mumbled.
"Not if we're careful. They won't even notice until far later, and by then we'll be gone,"
Hunter said as he set a gloved hand on the fourth icicle in.
"This one, it'll give us space to slip through while still blocking the others, unless they walk all the way past the fence to look for damage."
He glanced about, shining a light toward the fence we'd sneaked through.
"Something tells me this area doesn't see a lot of foot traffic."
Tripp started at the top, swinging his pickaxe with surprising accuracy. It dug in, and he struck it a few more times before stepping aside.
"You want to give it a go, Walker?"
I rolled my shoulders and swung, the pick slipping off target and striking the wrong icicle. I didn't let it dissuade me and tried again, this time sending a chunk of ice free. Once I built up a sweat, he took over, and in a few minutes we had the top and bottom of the giant ice crystal severed. Veronica used the saw to finish the job, acting more delicately for the finishing touches, and it fell to the rocky ground, crashing into three large sections. Marcus shone his light through, and his eyes lit up.
"We did it!"
He was the first in, sliding between the remaining lengths of frozen water, and I slipped in after him. The room was cold, and my breath shot out in hurried, misty puffs. His beam hit, the light reflecting wildly off the sheer formations. The token was in here, somewhere. The room was small, with all of us pressed inside, and Veronica stood close, her hips touching mine.
"Where is it?"
It had been left here intentionally to be unearthed by the right person. That meant there had to be a sign, a label of sorts. The first one had been secured under a tree, growing where it shouldn't have been, so I sought an indicator similar in nature. I scoured the floor, with ice crystals over the rough tube surface, but found nothing. I looked up, peering at the ceiling. It only took a few moments to see the etching, high enough to avoid being frozen and covered. It was directly above another corridor, one almost invisible until you were at the right angle. The mark was an ancient Mayan emblem, and I smiled, imagining Clayton or my father sketching the picture and handing it to Luis to use when he ditched the token. I was the first one through, the stone passageway pushing tight against my ribcage as I pressed between the walls, breaking free after an agonizing moment. My helmet's light guided me in the dark space, and I saw that the crevasse ran for another 50 yards or so, narrowly descending at every footstep. Stay back if you're claustrophobic, I called to the others, and no one else joined me. It was so cold. Ice crystals had formed along the rocky ceiling. The passage slimmed even more, and I sank to my knees, crawling over the stone floor for the end of the tunnel. By the time I reached the finishing point, my teeth chattered, and my fingertips were numb.
Where are you?
I asked out loud, but the token didn't answer. My light illuminated the cramped area, but there was little more than lava rock coated in a layer of ice. Perhaps I'd missed a marking somewhere, a tunnel I hadn't seen on the way inside. I retraced my steps, slowly and surely, until I returned to the start. Marcus's flashlight shone in my eyes, and I shielded them. Trip, pass me the ice pick.
Did you find it?
Hunter's eyes were huge, his breathing labored.
Not yet, but it has to be there, probably buried in years of ice.
That had to be it. Veronica didn't look so confident as she rubbed her arms with gloved hands, shifting on her feet to stay warm. I'll be right back. I glanced at the tunnel again, not wanting to revisit the confined, cold walls, but I did it, moving faster the second trip. With as much mobility as I could muster, I hacked at the ice, pieces flying at my face. I kept hitting the surface, eventually making an indent. Sweat escaped my chilled body while I struck the ice, damned if I was going to leave these lava tubes without the second token. I heard Marcus calling for me, asking if I was okay, and I shouted with labored breaths that I was fine. Just a few more minutes. The ice continued to separate as my arms grew tired. I ceased, letting the pick fall from my grip, and I stretched my fingers, leaning into the wall. And I saw it. The familiar hexagonal shape beckoned me from under a thin, clear layer, and I laughed, the cackle of a madman nearing the cusp of his sanity. With a frenzied effort, I broke it free and slipped my glove off, wanting to feel the cold alien metal on my fingers. We had the second token. Hours later, I was still shaking with a blend of excitement and trepidation. Our trip to Japan had been faster and more efficient than any of us had assumed. Hunter demanded we pack our things and head to the airport before anyone caught wind of what the purpose of the ice tube's visit had been. The believers could be anywhere, and it was obvious Trip was on edge since Marcus had advised us about Haja and Hassin's murders. Guilt had a funny way of surfacing. I dissociated myself from their deaths for the last day, but as we boarded the private jet, the pressure built, and I wondered how many more allies would fall prey to the cult's obsession before we'd completed our search for the tokens. "Everything good?" Marcus asked, taking the seat across from me. A private charter was so far removed from the regular coach flights and connectors we were used to, but Marcus acted like this was an everyday occurrence. I peered behind me as the flight attendant chatted with Veronica near the cockpit doors. "Any word on the objects?" His computer was already out of his bag, and he opened the laptop. I watched Veronica as he checked his favorite sources and smiled as she conversed with the Japanese woman in English.
"Nothing to speak of, but we may encounter some issues in Paris," he said.
"Protests?" I asked.
"Looks like some group is rallying people into a frenzy and the church is admonishing their claims. From the posts I've seen, things are about to get dicey."
He turned the computer around and set it on the table between us, positioning the screen so we could both view it. The video followed a small group of people holding signs and walking toward Avenue des Champs-Élysées. They repeatedly chanted in French, and I attempted to decipher the phrase. I think they're saying, "Come and save us." These people hope aliens are heading for Earth?
You know the type. They're probably blowing off steam, desperate for a movement to stand behind. I dated a girl in college. She was always trying to drag me to some stupid event or another. Mostly it was a bunch of lonely kids using random causes to meet people. This is probably like that. See, wine bottles, lots of laughing.
Marcus indicated another group joining up with our protesters. It's not like they have any foundation for a viable protest, I said.
Don't they?
Hunter asked, appearing from nowhere.
Not really.
What good is jabbing placards into the air? I waited for his response. Hunter took a seat at a couch between us, and the motion appeared to pain him.
Rex, it's always them versus oppression. The youth against war, famine, the royals, the government. Throughout time, there have been anti-establishment factions, and nothing's changed. People do things differently in Western cultures, but as we've seen in our own country in recent years, no one is willing to stand by quietly while they feel a disservice is occurring. These Parisians want their voices heard, and it likely has naught to do with the mysterious objects, not directly. The objects give them a reason to gather. Their own deep-rooted issues, the cause for protest, even if they don't know it.
Subconscious protest? Marcus queried, a smirk on his face.
Of sorts, Hunter said. This is peaceful.
We watched the video, finding the group had increased to well past 100 people. Some were laughing, others dancing and stalking the famous avenue, surrounded by glitzy storefronts. Men in expensive suits and manicured beards watched the procession from the sidelines. Women in exquisite dresses cringed at the youthful mobs storming their streets.
Do you see how they always go to the wealthy areas, knowing that they will undoubtedly receive media coverage? They also want the rich to take notice, to see that they exist. They want the government to remember that they pay taxes, that they have pulses and value to society.
I laughed as Veronica arrived with Trip in tow.
What's so funny?
We're getting a lesson in civil rights by Hunter Madison in a private jet en route to Paris from Japan. If that isn't a punchline to a bad joke, I don't know what is. I told her.
Heed my warning, Rex. Paris may be calm at the moment, along with the rest of the cities around the world, but when these objects are closer to our humble little planet, the story will progress from a walk in the park to a hike into hell.
Hunter squinted as the lights dimmed inside the cabin. Marcus closed the laptop and we settled into the most comfortable airline seats I'd ever encountered and waited for takeoff. The flight was long, and I, for one, was ready for some sleep. Any luck decoding the final location? I asked Hunter quietly. His eyes were closed, and I saw his lip flinch at my question.
Let's worry about locating the tokens we know of and deal with that another day.
He'd already suggested that the sixth would go unfound, but I was beginning to understand Hunter better. If he had the case and five tokens, nothing in this world would prevent him from solving the last piece of the puzzle. I took the cue as we lifted from the airport runway and started our journey to the third token in Paris, France.